All right. Thank you, guys. I'll take maybe a page out of Lee's playbook here and stand beside the podium. When I stood in front of the podium before, I really couldn't see you guys. So it's a lot better view from this side. So I appreciate the setup Lee gave me before. He said he set me up as well as he could, and I kidded him coming off the stage that he's actually set me up a whole lot better in the past. Some of you may know the inside jokes related to that. At any rate, what I wanted to visit with you a little bit about, kind of at a high level, is an effort that the team at U.S. Mark, Warren Snelling, Larry Keene, and Mark Thalman, Bob Weber at Kansas State, Bruce Golden at Theta Solutions, and myself have been engaged in over a year. And I want to try to set the stage for why we think this effort is actually important. If we look back the past 18 to 24 months related to genetic evaluation in beef cattle, we've seen some substantial changes, which have all been very positive in my mind. The majority of those changes are related to the way we've incorporated genomic information into genetic evaluation, so various single-step methods. And when I put these slides together, I'd said that, are we done with changes? And Dan, your membership would obviously answer no right now. But the argument I was trying to make is that even though we crossed an important threshold related to genomic evaluations, we're not done with changes to genetic evaluation. And although we're going to continue to make improvement related to genomic evaluations and prediction, we need to now turn organizational focus in terms of the way we actually make the decisions. And I agree with Lee that economic selection indices are clearly misunderstood by the masses. And that's unfortunate when we have a tool that's as valuable as they are that's misunderstood. And so I might contend that now effort needs to be focused on getting additional phenotypes into genetic evaluation for routine and non-routinely recorded traits, and then enabling accurate selection decisions. So the team that I mentioned before contended that we have a lot of the partial solutions available to do that. We just haven't combined those partial solutions into a usable form. So although EPD have been available to the U.S. beef industry for roughly four decades, survey data from Bob Weber that he published in 2014 would suggest that only about 30% of beef cattle producers utilize EPDs in their selection process or as their primary selection criterion. And we could argue that if the 30% is the right 30%, then the impact is maybe a bit less than what it would be otherwise. But still, that's a concerning number to me. And I might contend that part of the lack of technology adoption is due to the confusion surrounding how to best utilize those predictions and the fact that some or the majority of beef breed organizations publish upwards of 20 different EPD. And I'm not at all suggesting that we don't publish EPD, and I'm not suggesting that we don't continue to develop more EPD, but I think it is honestly a bit unreasonable to believe that the clientele, the beef industry, have the requisite tools, skills, or time to optimally make use of all of those predictions. And by no means, don't leave here and say, Spengler just got up and told me I'm stupid, because that's not what I'm saying to all of you. What I'm saying is that it's virtually impossible to do that, to sort through 20 different EPDs and say, this information, plus what I know about breed differences, plus what I know about heterotic effects, now I'm going to magically combine all that and make an optimal decision. That's an extremely tough task. So we've done an excellent job of turning data into information. That information are the tools we provide in terms of EPDs. And so now we need to turn that growing list of tools into informed decisions. We heard a lot this morning about technologies that enable us to make faster rates of genetic gain. We saw the breeder's equation at least a couple of times, Allison, this morning. But I would tell you it's not the lack of tools that impede genetic progress in beef cattle. It's the adoption of the tools that impede the progress, right? So we have substantial genetic leaks. So anytime you looked at the really high indexing bull and said, I can't use him, he's ugly headed, you created a leak in genetic gain, right? So those are the things that largely impede the rate of genetic gain we make. And so we need to make these decisions easier. Of course, there are several methods from which we can use to make simultaneous change in multiple traits. Tandem selection, that's where I say I'm going to select on trait X until I get to some level that I'm fine with, and then I'm going to ignore it, and I'm going to select on trait Y. That's inefficient, and if traits X and Y are related, if they're correlated, and unfavorably, it's possible then I erode the progress I made in trait X once I begin to select on trait Y. That's tandem selection. Independent culling levels, which in my experience is what a lot of beef cattle producers practice. They don't call them that. So it's when you look through the sale catalog and you set these thresholds that a bull has to meet for all the traits, and you cross out the ones that don't meet every threshold, and you put stars next to the ones that do, and then when the bull that looks the best doesn't have the most stars, you change your thresholds until you get him high on the list. Okay, those are really independent culling levels. The problem with that is, what happens when the bull misses one of your magical thresholds by just a little bit, but he exceeded your thresholds for everything else? Perhaps economically, he's the one that could advance your breeding objective the most, but you cross him off the list. Selection indices, as you might guess, economic-based are the preferred method, and they're not new. So if we look back in an animal framework in the early 1940s, this was proposed. A plug for the guidelines again and the reading section I mentioned, Scott Newman did some writing on selection indices for the wiki. And introduced me to a paper by Smith in the 1930s, I believe it was, Scott? Yeah, so proposing selection index-based concepts in an agronomy space before the papers I have here in the 1940s. But not widely released by a breed association until 2004 in the U.S. That was actually Charlotte. So about a 60-year technology time lag. So again, it's not the availability of tools and methods that impede progress for us. It's the adoption of the things that we actually have. And there have been a lot of efforts in the scientific community to use quantitative bioeconomic models to explicitly inform the trade-off decision between multiple traits. And, of course, one of those in the room, Mike McNeil, amongst the other authors that I list here. And we've used that technology to develop as is our nature, an exhaustive list now of indexes to go with the exhaustive list of EPDs we have. And I'm sure I've skipped some breed in here, so I apologize for that. It's not with malice aforethought. I've delineated them into what I consider terminal or general purpose. I know some of you probably take offense at me calling those general purpose and some of them not maternal, but I think those contemplate terminal at some endpoint, but also the retention of replacement females. So that's why I call them general purpose. I'm not going to go through those other than say we do have a lot of indices available throughout the majority of our major U.S. beef breeds. Selection index in a nutshell, really based on breeding objectives. So what is it that's my goal as an enterprise? Economic parameters, relationship amongst traits that I select on and that I wish to improve. And, of course, herd means or population means as well, depending on whether it's a breed-wide basis or a herd basis. And an important thing to note is these are tools designed to improve commercial-level net profit. For many of us, that seems intuitive, but I'd contend there's some in here that maybe struggle with that concept. It is designed to increase the profitability of your commercial bull customers. And that's not to be confused with may be desired breed association objectives. Those are two different balls of wax. Of course, these are been around for about 10 years in the beef industry, but as Lee insinuated, old hat for other animal industries. The shortcomings of these tools is, although they are extremely useful and most certainly the preferred method of multiple trait selection, they're not directly comparable across breeds for a multitude of reasons. They assume some constant environmental conditions and marketing strategies for all producers. The decision quantification is an additive genetics framework only, so not contemplating heteronic effects. And I would argue they're not engaging. So it's a black box. Here's a number, and trust us, it'll meet your breeding objective and your economic circumstances. And so I think the latter, more than anything, has impeded the use of these tools. I'd also say we talk about environmental conditions a lot. Environmental conditions, in my opinion, are really an economic hurdle, so I can change the environment. It just costs money to do it. So environmental constraints become economic constraints at some level. The reality is decisions should contemplate multiple populations or breeds, however you wish to think about it. The problem is beef cattle EPD in large context or in large sense of different breeds are reported on different bases, making them inherently impossible to directly compare. And if we look back to the early 1990s, in response to that issue, the Meat Animal Research Center began computing the crossbreed EPD adjustment factors annually. And conceptually, those tools are easy to use, but admittedly can be cumbersome for producers to go through and do, particularly on the fly. Traditionally, they're released on an annual basis in the summer. That's problematic because that really makes them out of date by the time most of the bull buying actually occurs in the spring in particular. And if there are changes, large changes to national cattle evaluation in the interim, obviously they're automatically out of date. And they also only contemplate a relatively narrow suite of traits, pretty much confined to growth and carcass. So as part of what we're talking about, it would be really nice to do the adjustment across breed behind the scenes to take away the cumbersome nature of producers needing to do that. The conundrum becomes that we as an academic community promote the use of crossbreeding and focus on economically relevant traits, yet we really haven't delivered tools that enable producers to do that in a usually user-friendly format. Right, so we've talked a bit out of both sides of our mouth. So new EPD for ERT, that's horrible. New expected progeny differences for economically relevant traits. So recent changes to the project design of the germplasm evaluation program at US Mark can make it feasible to compute multi-breed EPD of sires who have offspring for what we may call novel traits, so things that are not routinely recorded in industry or that do not have EPD available. And so one way to make those then available to the larger beef community is through a web-based decision support platform. And so a nice thing about that is it not only releases that information to the industry, but can also allow predictions of genetic merit for traits that are drivers of profit at the commercial level where we simply don't have genetic predictors now. So think about things like disease. And there certainly is value in discovering or in garnering additional information at the commercial level. And this, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about this. I know a lot of breed associations have essentially incentive programs to get additional carcass data, additional mature cow weights, what have you. That's a nice step, and I think a sound investment. But subsidies run out of money at some point. And so that's not a long-term solution to getting a continual flow of those kind of data. And so there does need to be a lot more work in this arena. But the point I want to make here is that having predictions or really phenotypes and ultimately predictions for some of these traits inherently increase the agreement or the concordance between the traits that really drive profit that are in our breeding goal and the traits that are in our index. And as a consequence, increases the accuracy of that index. So here, if we just look at the general form of an economic index, the Bs are the weights applied to the EPDs, the Vs are the economic values. This G11 I have here is really the inverse of the genetic covariance matrix between the traits in the index, and the G12 is the genetic covariance between the traits in our goal that are really drivers of profit and the traits that are on our index. If there is complete agreement between the traits that are profit drivers and the traits we have EPDs for, then this reduces to the second form here where the index weights are equal to the economic values. That's the situation we really wish to get to. And it requires, though, garnering additional phenotypes and predictions for those traits, which we simply don't have in much frequency right now. And so this just illustrates the accuracy between H, our breeding goal, and I, the index. And the point I want to make here is through all the advancements we've made in genomic evaluation, we've increased the component trait EPD, which has an impact on the accuracy of the index. But what we need to make sure that we do are two things from here forward: increasing the number of economically relevant traits for which we have predictions, which I mentioned mechanisms to do that or thoughts around this project to do that. The second thing is we need to make sure that as we think about customizable indexes, that the actual index weights are economically driven. So a lot of people think about customization. Wade Schaefer brought this up in a meeting here the other day. Customization means that I, in a very ad hoc fashion, decide that I want to weight trait 1 twice as much as trait 2. That's not an optimal index. And so as a consequence, then, I've sacrificed accuracy. So as we think about index customization, we're thinking about using herd-level information to still develop an economically-based index. So as we think about making decisions, bull purchasing decisions are unique to each herd, as producer goals and inputs vary considerably. So you can think about calving ease direct, choosing bulls based on that to breed to heifers. And that's dependent on labor availability, tolerance of risks, current herd levels of dystocia, et cetera. Or really, what should the value of maternal weaning weight be? That could be conditional on the production environment and forage availability, which again get to the costing of feed. And then also target market endpoint dictate traits and production levels relative to gain and carcass merit. So these things are relatively herd specific, although generalities can be made. Certainly past efforts have been made in this arena relative to decision support tools. A lot of you would recognize DESI or the Colorado beef cow production model, both extremely useful tools. But neither one widely adopted, arguably due to the level of complexity and detail relative to firm-level inputs that were really required to parameterize the underlying model. So we might contend that to achieve widespread use of such a decision support tool, there really needs to be a tiered level of input information with default values that are then customizable to fit specific users. The other thing we want to get at is the thought process of capital investment in genetics. So producers face the problem of obtaining the best bulls for their operation, conditional on their setting, but best is a relative concept. So if you think about comparing two bulls based on index value, and let's say the index value is $500 different, but the better bull costs $2,000 more, then maybe choosing the less desirable bull from a genetic merit standpoint was economically the best decision to have made. And I doubt that many of us think about sire selection that way. That's the way we should think about it if we're profit-driven, right? If we're profit-driven. If we're not, then buy whatever bull you want for as much money as you want to buy them for. So our proposed work, in April of 2018, we were awarded a USDA AFRI CARE grant, CARE for Critical Ag Research and Extension. Grant funding lasts for 3 years. Total award amounts $300,000. So Lee made the point that there needs to be more investment made in this arena. Allison, I've had sub-awards for more than $300,000, right? But we think it's certainly a starting place. And so our objectives were to develop this web-based decision support tool, train key technology adopters, seed stock producers, consultants to actually use the tool in a train-the-trainer approach, and also fill existing knowledge gaps by estimating breed and heterotic effects for economically relevant traits where those may not be readily available. So the overall objective is to provide then software that allows beef cattle producers to make more profitable genetic selection decisions, integrating firm-level economic data, average performance information, and combining additive and non-additive genetic effects towards making an economically advantageous decision in terms of sire selection. And we can use, as I mentioned, this web-based application to compute and release a crossbreed EPD adjustment factor. So the idea is that a user can upload a set of bulls on offer that they're interested in, or for collaborating breed associations, we can use a secure API then to pull data and run the customizable index across all individuals. So we've framed some use cases. Three possible use cases are commercial buyers looking to source either semen or bulls. Could be seed stock sellers putting something on offer, or seed stock buyers then wishing, of course, to trade amongst other seed stock buyers. So those are three really different classes of users, all of which have different needs from such a tool. The other thing we've talked about is, and several people have been involved in these discussions, should these solely be optimal indices in an economic framework, or do we allow a desired gains approach, particularly on the seed stock side, where that could be advantageous if they have a gap, particularly for a trait, that maybe they're losing market share because of that. So I think the decision we've come to is we can allow perturbing the optimal index, but then return to the user the really opportunity cost for having done that. So what is the risk if I actually perturb the optimal index and use something like a desired gains approach? So the interface, I talked through the identifying a set of candidates, entering information about the cowherd to determine the appropriate index, having a tiered system to accommodate different levels of knowledge. And the point I'd make is the commercial producers in particular that have the most detailed information relative to unit cost of production will get the most out of something like this. So I'd just like to say the impetus for this project is not the belief that currently available selection indices are so inherently flawed they're of little value. That's not it at all. They're actually very useful tools. But we think we can improve on it by contemplating the non-additive genetic effects and perhaps engaging the users in the formation of the index that they then apply to bulls on offer, which maybe provides an uptake in the use of the technology. So the final thought is that I wish commercial producers would contemplate bull buying decisions for the capital investment that they actually are. And our goal is to enable those decisions and help alleviate the cumbersome, if not near impossible, task to combine all those partial solutions into a single decision. So with that, I'd like to thank you, take any questions that you might have. That's actually the title and award number of the grant. Like I said, we're roughly a year and 2 months into it, so not even halfway. We hope to have a working beta version in the first quarter of 2020 that then we can begin test driving, if you will. So with that, I'd take any questions from you guys. Thank you.